Cloudcast Media.
Welcome to Your Next Mission Podcast with the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley. Proudly presented by Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans.
Good day out there, veterans and families, and welcome to Season 2 of Your Next Mission, a program initiative of the American Freedom Foundation. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and your host. We have a great show for you today. In fact, we have a wonderful show. But before we get started, if you're watching this on YouTube, please like us and click on the subscribe button below, because we need our veterans to follow us so we can help you each and every day with the issues that you have. We're going to focus this discussion today on the U.S. Army National Trainer Center, better known as NTC, at Fort Irwin, California. Now, before we get started, I want to thank our presenting sponsors, Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans for making Your Next Mission happen. They love our veterans and families, and we certainly love them. As I mentioned, today's theme is about the U.S. Army National Trainer Center, again, better known as NTC, in Fort Irwin, California. And I'm so excited to introduce Brigadier General Curtis Taylor, Commanding General, and Command Sergeant Major William Justice, Sergeant Major of the U.S. Army National Trainer Center at Fort Irwin, California. Welcome, gentlemen. So good to have you on the show.
Great to be here, SMA. Real honor.
SMA, thanks for having us.
Well, thank you for being on. That's for doggone sure. And I know the audience was really eager to hear about all the things that you guys are doing out in NDC. But before we do that, can each one of you tell us a little bit about yourself? And, sir, we're going to start with you, and then Sergeant Major, chime right in after he's finished, sir.
Well, SMA, first off, it's a real honor to be on the show. And just looking at some of the podcasts you've done in the past, pretty august group there, and I include me and Sergeant Major Justice in that, is an honor. We think we got a story to tell out here at NTC. I appreciate you taking the time to spend with us. My background, I grew up in a military family, did all the normal armored cavalry things, a couple tours in Iraq, a couple in Afghanistan, served in a bunch of different places. Most importantly, I've been married to the same woman for 25 years now, and raised two great daughters who are both doing well and loving what I'm doing out here at the National Training Center. I will add that the first job I ever had that I got paid for was working at the AFI shop at Fort Irwin, California, when I was a young teenager in high school in 1986. So I'm truly back home here in the desert. Yeah. I had an opportunity to serve here as a teenager. Take that long bus into Yermo. There's more than just a railhead in Yermo. There's actually a high school there. Pretty good football team. Played a little bit there. And not enough for me to go anywhere else with that, but it was fun while it lasted. And then had the opportunity to come back here as a captain in 2001. Had little kids at the time, and our family just fell in love with this place. Yeah. And so I've really enjoyed what Fort Irwin has offered for a long time. I've had to see it as a dependent myself, and then as a young officer, and now as the post commander, and it's a dream come true. Thanks.
Well, I got to tell you something real quick. I'm an old Cav guy. I was on 48, 60s, A1s, A3s, and M1s. For the first thing, so I've been out to NTC quite a few times. The second thing is, you said you was married for 25. I'm having my 51st wedding anniversary in January, so I would sort of say that you're a rookie on that side of the house, but if you need any help, just let me know. But the key to success in marriage is she's always right, you're always wrong. There's no question.
Absolutely. Never try to win an argument. That's what we've learned. But I know I'm just getting started. I got a ways more to go, but we're having a good time so far. Thanks for having me.
Best decision I ever married, best decision I ever made was getting married to my wife. I love her to death. She's my best friend. So, hey, Sergeant Major, how about you? Give us a little update about yourself.
Yeah. So I'm born and raised in Ohio. I'm one of four boys, all of which at one time or another served in the military. I've been here for about 30 years. Came up as a tanker.
Hoorah.
I became a tanker because, you know, my grandfather was on my mom's side was a tanker in World War II, and I grew up hearing stories about tanks, and so that's what I did. We've been married for 27 years. I am a father of one son, and I'm recently a new grandfather, so I'm pretty excited about that.
All right.
yeah, right? I'm excited. We're going to go see him at Christmas. I don't have quite the time that General Taylor has at the NTC, but I am a repeat offender. I was an ops group once upon a time, and then I was fortunate enough to come back as the post-star major. And I'll tell you, I've just been blessed. I mean, honestly, this is the only thing I've ever wanted to do in my life. And, you know, by God's grace and my wife's support, you know, she lets me keep doing it. So, that's not true, but you know, by her support, I've been able to continue to do it. And so I'm really blessed, and, you know, I love what I'm doing.
Yeah. I tell you that Sergeant Major, you know, and both of you know that families suffer a great deal. Well, you know why you're on active duty. You deploy, you do all those things. You know, you're sort of having fun, and your spouses are back doing the hard things. You know, I remember that. I do really for the audience. You need to know this. You guys miss so many Christmases and so many birthdays, and it's just it's really sad. I know when I got out though, I told my wife for the rest of my life, I'm going to do everything I can to make your life better. And whatever you want, I'm going to do. There's no question about that. So God bless both of you, and thank you for your service. I only stayed 36. I wish I would have made it 66. I would have stayed as long as I could. Probably stayed till the day I was dying. Hey, sir, can you tell us, you know, the mission of NTC and why that's so important? I know it's a big mission, no question about that, and I've been out there quite a few times. But can you tell the audience about what the mission is for NTC?
Yeah, and I appreciate you asking. We've got a very simple and very, very important mission, and sometimes the simplest things are the hardest, right? Our mission is to prepare Army tactical formations to be ready to win the first battle of the next war.
Yeah.
That's really important the way we word that. So if you know our history and American history of warfare, we've done some great things in battle, but we've always started off a little out of balance. World War II, Kasserine Pass, did not go well for the American Army. We were ill-prepared, and we didn't understand how to combine arms at the battalion and company level. You know, Korea, we had Task Force Smith. In Vietnam, we had some bad days there in the Yadrang Valley. And we really had to learn from those first fights, adapt, and become the great Army that we ultimately became in each one of those conflicts. But what we realized in 1973 is, as a bunch of great leaders before us were watching the Yom Kippur War, we realized that warfare had become so rapid and so decisive that really that first battle was going to determine some strategic outcomes. And we could no longer afford to make a lot of mistakes and shed a lot of blood, frankly, in those early conflicts and then learn. We had to find another place to learn those hard lessons. And so a bunch of smart guys and some great leaders who helped create the Army we have today, guys like Don Starry and others, got together in the early 80s and said, we need a location where we can bring together our tactical formations and create that crucible of combat in the most realistic environment that we can possibly come up with so that we build those lessons learned. And so we did that. It was one of the great big bets. Now it seems like it's the way we've always done it. But this was a controversial move, the idea that we were going to take brigades from home station, take them all the way out to California, and have some other installation commander be involved in their training and provide essentially an external look at their readiness. That was pretty controversial at the time. But a lot of great leaders put that together. It's kind of messy at first. We started out at battalion operations in 1981. By 1986, we moved to brigade-level operations. And once we got that rhythm going, we really started hitting it. So 1986 up until the mid-90s, we were doing 14 rotations a year. Wow. And what that meant for our soldiers is you were getting the soldiers here at the National Training Center, you were getting a little time off in the summer, a little time off at Christmas. But the rest of the time, there was a unit coming or going and sometimes coming and going same time to keep up with that tempo. And those 14 rotations a year fought out in the desert in the blazing heat, the freezing cold, over time built the Army that we have today. And so if you look at the success we had in Desert Storm, which is only 5 years after we went to brigade level operations, The ability to destroy the fourth largest army in the world in under 100 hours. That was only achieved because we got the best NCO Corps in the world, and because we got the National Training Center and the Joint Readiness Training Center with it. Our ability to push forward across the Kuwaiti border, deep into Iraqi territory, and take down a city of 5 million people and the army that occupied it, and to do that in 21 days' time, that is an incredible feat when you think about that. We did that just 12 short years after Desert Storm. That was born out of rotation after rotation of coming to the railhead in Yermo, downloading your equipment, having to fight your way up Mannix Trail, having to get out into the box, and then do that 14-day sustained operation through the desert. And we would not have been able to do that had we not rehearsed it time and time again. So the National Training Center continues to focus on preparing our tactical formations, and I don't just say brigades, because we do a lot of training from platoon all the way up to sometimes we get echelons above brigade and divisions. But we do a lot of training to prepare those formations to fight and win that first battle of the next war, and that's what our mission is.
Yeah, it was one of the things. I'm going to add to that a little bit. We're not the biggest army in the world. No, we're a third. Is that right? China, India, and then the United States Army. Just a question I wasn't going to ask you, but you made me think about it. So based on your training and technology, that just makes us a better army, I'm sure. And the reason why is what you're talking about right there.
Well, yeah, exactly. In warfare is a symphony. It's about bringing together, at the tactical level it is. It is about bringing together a bunch of complementary capabilities in a synchronized fashion. That is the essential art of war at the tactical level. It's just like an orchestra. And like any orchestra knows, you can have great tuba players and great flute players, but if they're not playing together and they don't practice together, yeah, and don't learn how to bring that together, that's an art that has to be trained. And you need a lot of land and a lot of training, a lot of space to do that. And what the National Training Center allows us to do is to bring that together. And every time we do it, a new generation of leaders gets to see what that symphony looks like and understand the enormous amount of work that goes into making it all work together.
One last thing. I got a question. You're getting me all motivated here. The thing about that is you can see a tremendous change from when they get there to when they leave. Is that correct? I mean, the efficiency and all of that. And Sergeant Major, you can jump in there too on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll go first and then pass it over to Sergeant Major. Absolutely. We see a vertical learning path, right? And the most important thing that we ask units come in is they got to come in with lethal platoons and trained and disciplined squads. That foundational readiness is so important. But when they come in here and they bring that together, especially if they've invested in more than just their tactical formation, more than just the maneuver folks, but they've got mature command posts and mature field trains, and they understand how they're going to use their intelligence company and how they're going to use their signal company. When you've got that mastery at the platoon level, and what you just they just take off here.
Yeah.
And it is so fun to see that learning that happens over the course of just 14 short days.
Yeah.
And Sergeant Major, I'll pass it over to you.
Yeah. Go ahead, Sergeant Major.
I think what the boss said, the thing about the NTC is that, it becomes kind of a certification event for a brigade. Hey, we say this brigade's ready to, but that's at its core, in my opinion, that's part of it. But at its core, what it really is, it's a leader development. I think the General Martin used to call the crucible, leader development crucible. It's supposed to make a leader have their hardest day in the desert. And what you see is as those days progress, they get better and better and better.
Yeah.
They begin to solve problems that frankly they didn't even know that they had, because the whether it's the op four or the terrain or the distance, they begin to solve problems, sustainment or CASAVAC or you name it. And they grow, and what you see from the beginning, and this is from brigade commander down to team leader, the growth that you see over the course of a rotation from start to finish, just from a leader development standpoint, is to me that's really what's special about the NTC.
Yeah, so man, I'm going to ask you a question. How important is just the basic fundamentals of being a soldier? You know, I'm talking about physical fitness, weapons. I used to say that if you can get that basic fundamentals of being a soldier, basic tactics together, it saves lives in war. I mean, what do you think about that? Just the basics.
No, absolutely. It's foundational. It's just what it sounds like. It's, you know, as an Army, we're beginning to relearn things about training management, how to identify the high payoff task, you know, that supports the collective task, that supports the metal task, and those individual tasks that support all those collective tasks. Those are what's foundational. Like you said, being able to shoot, being able to maneuver, basic first aid. And the desert, I'll tell you, the desert in the summertime will let you know if there's a hole in your fitness program.
Yeah.
It's a challenge. And I think that those are the things that, I mean, at our core, those foundational things we've got to be able to do. Like General Taylor said, if you show up with lethal platoons and squads, you know, we can get you there. But that foundational training that has to take place at home station, and physical fitness is just, it's critical.
You know, you guys have got me so pumped up sitting in the chair. One last question before I'm going to get on to something else. And this is for both of you. How important is battle drills? I mean, just drills, because I always do battle drills and I want everybody to do the same thing every time. How important is that when they come out there to the NTC?
SMA, I'm glad you brought that up. It is so important. And anybody who thinks, you know, we've kind of matured past that or that's something from a different century, absolutely not. What you have to have is a cohesive team that reacts in unison to contact in the same way, in a synchronized way, yeah. Right? That is so important. You know, one of Rommel's conclusions as he was attacking across France that remains true today was, in any chance outcome between, you know, German and French forces, it was the unit that could establish the highest volume of fire at the outset of the engagement that inevitably won the engagement.
Yeah.
And that principle remains true today. There's no technology out there that's going to change that.
Nope.
And you know, the types of engagements have changed and the ranges and everything else. But that instant that you face a unexpected threat, your ability to respond as a team in a cohesive way and then to create a synchronized response to that threat is going to determine whether your soldiers live or die.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more important than having well-rehearsed battle drills to make that happen.
I used to work on drills when I was a platoon sergeant, first sergeant, and all the way through my military career. And I know it is important. Sergeant Major, you want to add anything to that real quick?
I think this conversation makes me think back to when I was a platoon sergeant. You know, platoon tactics aren't that complicated. I used to tell my platoon leader, hey, it's fix and flank, sir, and who wins is who does it faster.
Yeah.
And battle drills are that speed element. Battle drills, you know, like General Taylor said, those set actions that we know to execute in a set of circumstances, it takes a lot of the thinking out of it, which allows for speed. It becomes reactive. It becomes intuitional. And that speed is what makes all the difference. It only comes down to who can do it faster than the other guy and more accurately, and battle drills and training of that sort, to me, is, again, back to the conversation about being foundation.
Those are foundational things. One of the things most people don't realize is when you're doing those battle drills, you'll do it. You won't be thinking it. You're doing everything the same way every time. And you got to think about being in a situation where there's people firing at you. There's a lot of things going on around you. And so knowing how to do that drill correctly each time. I, you guys probably don't know this, but I was overran once, 20 wounded and 7 killed in my platoon. And to this day, I don't think we ever talked about battle drills. That was years ago. But knowing what your job is, knowing what your responsibilities are, it's, you know, there's no second best in the military. You either win or you lose. There's, you know, they don't give you a second place trophy. You have to be the best at what you do each and every day. So I hope the audience has listened to what we're talking about today. It's about men and women that are literally willing to die to make sure that you have your freedoms. Sergeant Major, Fort Irwin is somewhat a remote and isolated area, to say the least. And it's really being on the edge of the Mojave Desert,
yes,
California. Can you explain, the advantages, this type of locations and what capabilities exist there that no other post camp or station around the world has? I mean, what's the advantage of ENTC?
So there's several things. When I talk about this, I typically tend to start with the physical terrain. The maneuver area in the box, what we call the box, is enormous. On top of that, the terrain is challenging. It's difficult. Very few home stations have terrain that matches what we have at the National Training Center. And that's important because when you're talking about sustainment, when you're talking about fires, when you're talking about combining arms, that terrain and that distance challenges that much more than it would be, say here at Fort Hood or any other installation, because it's just so much bigger. On top of that, as the American Army, we try to play away games. And this forces a unit to come to a location that they're not as familiar with as their own training area, where they'll then face a world-class Op 4. The 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment doesn't do anything but fight the Blue Force, 8-10 times a year. That's what they do, and they're very good at it. They know the terrain like an enemy on their ground would know the terrain. And that Op 4 is a big part of what we're able to challenge the Blue Force with, or the rotational unit. I think our instrumentation, which you just don't have, the instrumentation is what allows us to sit down. And when the real learning happens during the AAR, it takes all the debate out of what happened, because we bring up the instrumentation and I can show you where you were, who shot who, when, did they hit, did they miss? I can show you your decisions and the instrumentation. And then the real secret sauce is the OCT.
Yeah.
Somebody who's done that job before. If you're covering down on a platoon sergeant, you've been a platoon sergeant. If you're covering down on a company troop battery commander, you've been a company troop battery commander. You have that experience. And we use the AAR just like we've done for years to learn from ourselves, see ourselves, and get better. And I think that's what we have at the National Training Center that you just don't have anywhere else.
Yeah. Hey, sir, do you want to add anything to that? I want the audience to understand, this is a team that we talk to. This is a non-commissioned officer and an officer that work together each and every day to make sure we get the best out of the service members that are in our great Army. Sir, you want to add anything?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he nailed it. That triad of a professional op four, an experienced and well-trained observer controller team, and that sophisticated instrumentation. That's the magic of the CTC, and bring all that together. But there's a couple things we can do here that you just can't do at home station or, frankly, anywhere else in the world. And that is live fire at scale. We can execute a brigade level live fire here to allow the brigade to see what happens when you bring in with live bullets, all that artillery, all that, your breaching capability, your attack aviation capability, your direct fire weapon systems. You synchronize all that in a live engagement. You can really see the psychological effect that we can deliver against a determined enemy. And you've got to see that in real life to really appreciate how powerful it can be. Because we're out here in the desert, we can replicate the electronic spectrum much better. We can take away your GPS. We work with the FAA all the time to do GPS jamming. We take that away. We replicate a true EW threat out here. And then we can replicate in the force on force, we can replicate indirect fires very, very precisely. So the enemy can come at you with a couple of different ways, and one of it is through his indirect fire capability. We know we've got a couple of adversaries out there who are going to try to challenge us in that area. So being able to do that at scale here at the NTC is part of the unique aspects that we offer.
Yeah. We're talking with Brigadier General Curtis Taylor and CSM William Justice from NTC at Fort Irwin, California. And if you've been enjoying Your Next Mission with me, Jack L. Tully, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and don't forget, if you're enjoying this discussion, please like us and click on the subscribe button below and just join our team. That's what we want. Just like the Commander and Sergeant Major, we want you to be part of our team. Sir, to continue our discussion, modernization is a top priority for the Army. And NTC recently celebrated, I didn't know this till the other day, 40 years and 400 rotations. And And how have these rotations changed since we're out of Iraq and Afghanistan? And what is the modernization effort to are you seeing there?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that question. So, I said our mission is to prepare tactical formations to win the first battle of the next war, not the first battle of the last war. And so we learned an awful lot in Iraq and Afghanistan. But we recognize that the world didn't stand still while we were fighting those two extended conflicts. In fact, a lot of our competitors out there took a hard look at the way we were fighting and our ability to combine arms and try to keep pace with us and had some success. And so what we're seeing is a threat environment right now that looks very different from what we might have faced with an Iraqi insurgency or against the Taliban. And so when you come to the National Training Center, we're going to give you that threat environment. So since about 2009 or so, we've been moving out of an exclusive focus on counterinsurgency and moving into what we call the DATE, the Decisive Action Training Environment, which combines some aspects of a counterinsurgency fight. So there is a insurgency force. There are populations that require your influence and in some cases your control. And that's a factor to play to inform your planning. But more importantly, you're fighting a very, very capable enemy that's conducting decisive action against you. So where we're seeing the most modernization right now is we think about that future fight and we understand what a future conflict may look like in the 21st century is really in fires, intelligence, and lethal drones. Those are the three biggest areas. First, with fires, we know that we're entering a world where we have mass dynamic precision. What that means is we've got competitors out there that can hit us with precision weapons in mass, going way beyond just the ability to hit a couple high-value targets. But they can come after your tanks. They can come after your support elements, your artillery, everything with precision fires. And that those precision fires are getting good enough, they can even hit you while you're moving. And so we have paid a lot of attention to what happened in the Nagorno-Karabakh last year with the Azerbaijan and the Armenian armies. And their use of that precision fire capability was pretty important. The second thing we're working on is intel. The reality is we've got pervasive surveillance on the battlefield now. You can see your adversary in depth. If he's not adequately trying to expose to hide his position, you can see, you can detect him, you can track him, and you can target him in depth. And so we're creating that reality here. And I tell every brigade commander when they come in is, hey, if you're using the tools you have inside your own brigade talk right, you should know where every op-4 vehicle is most of the time. There's a couple of times where they can, if they're really trying hard, they can hide from you, but you should know where he's at. Likewise, you need to expect that he's going to know where most of your forces are most of the time. So how do we fight differently in that world? The third one we're bringing in, and again, tying back to Nagorno-Karabakh, is the use of these lethal drones. And so we just had a fight the other day in our big town, our largest urban site, about 700 buildings. Typical infantry battalion going in about 3 a.m., pre-dawn, hit the edge of the city, seizing a building, trying to work their way into the city. There were 25 lethal drones over top of that that battalion when they entered the city, dropping little munitions. And we've got a way to replicate that in a way that's safe for our soldiers. But that's a reality we've got to deal with. We saw that in Iraq, and we know that if we were facing a near peer or even a less than peer adversary, that those are weapons we're going to see on the battlefield. Yeah. So that's what a future a fight at the NTC is going to look like. It's not going to look like anything you experienced in Iraq or Afghanistan, but it is going to look like what we think future war is going to be for American forces.
I think one of the things, you touched on a lot of great things, but one of the things that really resonated with, when you talked about the tools, it's so important for commanders and sergeant majors to know what other MOSs, other skill sets have, so he can use all that stuff for yourself. And a lot of times people just, and you hit on it, just don't know what they have available for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a big thing you get out of coming here to the NTC is again, you're pretty good at your one instrument in the orchestra, yeah. But your instrument ain't going to be relevant unless you got a bunch of others coming with you. And we've got this saying, our Op 4 commander has this saying that, you know, if you come at me with direct fire, I'm gonna kill you. If you come at me with indirect fire, I'm gonna move. If you come at me with attack aviation, I'm gonna hide. All three of those I can defeat, but if you come at me with all three, I'm gonna die. Yeah. And that's what we've got to have, is that ability to synchronize, to combine arms at the platoon, company, battalion, and brigade level. And those arms are gonna change as technology evolves. But the system of combining arms remains the essential skill that our modern warriors have got to have.
I learned that at a very young age in the Army when I was in Vietnam. I learned how important it was to have infantry with me when I was breaking jungle, how important it was to have that artillery or aircraft behind me that can protect me. So I learned and developed that way throughout the United States Army about how I wanted to know what all capabilities that I have to assist me on the battlefield. So that's important stuff, and that's great information. And you're doing just a wonderful job. I can tell the enthusiasm out there, too. So Sergeant Major, attracting and retaining talented NCOs and officers can be challenging, particularly for a remote installation, which you talked about before, at a high tempo, knowing what you know now. Should our NCOs and officers fight for an assignment to be there or try to be there?
I'll tell you what, SMA. So I, like I said, I'm a repeat offender there at the National Training Center. My first time there, I was post my second battalion job. And so I go out there to be a 40, on the Cobra team, which is that's the call sign for a Sergeant Major OCT. I cover down on the cavalry squadron, Sergeant Major. And after doing two battalions, you know, you think you know a thing or two about being a battalion Sergeant Major and all the resources, like you guys were talking about, all the things that you have at your disposal. And I'll tell you what, I went out there and I learned more in my 30 months out there as an OC than I had learned probably in the previous, 5 years about war fighting. There's so much that's incredible about it. You are out there, with folks that are at the top of their game. I learned things about fires. I learned things about information collection. I learned things about signal, medical. I learned things about, sustainment operations. So what we say is if you want to earn your doctorate degree in war fighting, you come to the NTC and you be an OCT. You'll see things, you'll learn things from watching units, both good and bad. You get to work with fantastic professionals that just know what they're doing. And everyone that comes out there, whether you're in the Op 4 or whether you're in the 916th or an operations group, I tell them, if you and a counterpart PCS'd at the same time and they went somewhere else and you came here, you are going to be better for your time here. Our sustainers in the 916th Brigade, they move everybody in every rotation. That's every piece of equipment, every person. When the Army has movement control questions, they call 916. Operations group, we've talked about all the things that they do. And then the reps and sets that you get in the regiment. When you leave there, you're going to be better. If you're serious about your profession, the National Training Center is the place you want to come, whether it's to be in the Op 4 or 916th, or if you're more senior, to be in operations.
Yeah.
That's our message. We put a lot of work into recruiting.
Yeah, just an add-on question here. I know when I was on active duty, we used to have a program where if you was getting ready to take over a battalion or brigade or something, they could rotate, not rotate, but go out to NTC and sort of go through and see exactly what you have out there. Do you still do anything like that, bring out maybe former commanders or future commanders and future sergeant majors to visit NTC and see what's going on?
Well, SMA, we still got a pretty aggressive right seat ride program. PCC's timeline doesn't allow for, and COVID kind of paused a little bit of this. Right now, the timeline is not formally inculcated in PCC. But what I really like is we get a lot of our 07s and the COG, that's the battalion senior trainers and then our brigade senior trainer, talking back to those PCCs, those pre-command courses, to making sure we're sharing those lessons learned. But the one thing we always offer is for units to come out here and do a right seat ride along with our observer controllers or with our Op 4. We've had great success bringing intel officers out and having them ride along with our opposing force, and have them see how we fight, and how that they're able to. I mean, because you're not going to get that opportunity with the next adversary, so you might as well come out here and watch a bunch of smart young kids who are trying to defeat the American Army every day and see how they think through that process. And it's very helpful for our intel community.
Yeah. Sergeant Major, you want to add anything to that?
You know, SA, to the recruiting question again, I think one of the best things that that General Taylor and I have had the chance to kind of implement. And I'll tell you, the officers I think have been doing this for a while. The OCs that they identify to come out here, typically there's a brigade commander or a battalion commander or even a division commander, you know, who, you know, along with General Taylor, who have handpicked these folks to come out and do these jobs. You know, they're identified based on their talent. As an NCO Corps, we've started to put that in the hands of the division sergeant major.
Yeah.
And I think that that's paid off a lot. We do recruiting trips to installations based on, you know, we pull some data based on the new manning cycle, and we identify the right people that need to move at the right time to fill the jobs that we need filled. And the division sergeant major are supportive. They find the people that we need, and we talk to them, and you know, we start recruiting. General Taylor also started a program where we recruit in rotation. We identify folks, we bring them in, and we talk to them about being an OC and, you know, the National Training Center. And I think looking back, I think that is that's one of the best improvements that we've been able to drive in terms of recruiting.
Yeah, is that with the development of the AIM 2 portal and talent management task force is what the efforts are using to attract soldiers? Is that what you're just internally talking about?
Yeah, that's exactly right, SMA. We track very carefully, you know, who's coming up in that portal and what positions we have available. And I love it. You know, the statistics will tell you that Fort Irwin is one of the less desirable places to go because it's remote and isolated, and, yeah. and there's some limitations to being out here in the desert. So it's a great challenge for us. We've got to earn every recruit here in the National Training Center, and it makes us better leaders. Honestly, I'm a huge fan of the AIM portal system because it allows us to see our officer population well beyond the detail of just rank and branch. And number of years of service. I mean, that's how we used to make assignment choices. Now we're looking deep into officer skills, their knowledge, skills, and behaviors, and understanding them as a person, understanding their family. And then I've got to make a value proposition to them here at the National Training Center on why they want to come here.
Yeah.
And so it makes me a better leader, and it makes me enforce better leadership in my formations, because I know that the best recruiting tool I have is for captains, the best recruiting tool I have is the captains I have right now. And if I'm not treating them right, and I'm not delivering on that value proposition, providing a great community for their families, providing a predictable timeline so they can plan out their family vacations and everything else, and most importantly, providing them that PhD in warfighting, then they're going to go back to their peers and say, hey, you know, go somewhere else in Fort Irwin. But I know every day, we're getting reported on here by the quality of leadership we provide to our subordinates. That's how we attract and retain talent.
You know, I was reading something the other day that talked about people will stay with good leaders. They'll also ETS with, you know, away from bad leaders. So if you're keeping people out there, it's because you got great leadership out there. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. And you've been enjoying Your Next Mission.
You're watching Your Next Mission. Proudly presented by the Cavalry Agency. They help brands dominate no matter their size. Ideas, strategy, action. This is Cavalry. Learn more at cavalry.com. Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Purdue Global, providing affordable online education for hardworking adults. Learn more about a personalized, innovative, and world-class education at purdueglobal.edu. Veterans United Home Loans, the number one VA lender for 5 straight years. If you're buying, they're funding your dreams. Learn more at veteransunited.com. Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. I'm the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley. We're blessed to be here with Brigadier General Curtis Taylor and Command Sergeant Major William Justin from NTC at Fort Irwin, California. And I want all of our listeners to reach out to me directly. Tell us about your transition. If you're transitioning out of the military, tell us about it and tell us what topics you'd like to cover on this podcast, on this video. You can also call or text me at 844-424-1134. And you may not believe this, but I'll reach out to you. I may text you back. Or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Okay, let's pick it up where we left off. We're heading into our final segment with you today. And I hope you both enjoyed it as much as I have. And I've been having a great time. You're making me reminisce about all the good things that I did in the military. Hopefully I did in the military. I just have a couple more questions. Sir, the quality of life is a major priority. We just talked about that a minute ago, a major priority for the Army. What is the history of this initiatives, and what improvements have been made, and what is it? What's planned for the future?
Yeah, so the SMA and Chief Staff of the Army came down to Fort Irwin a couple years ago and looked at it and said, you know, we can do better. There are things that we can do to improve quality of life across the board. So they created a QOL task force. It designated three, now four installations to be a focus for quality of life. And that's Fort Irwin, Fort Polk, Alaska, and now Fort Hood. And that QOL task force up at the Pentagon is very focused on helping us with a broad breadth of issues and things that matter to families. Some of that is brick and mortar. And anybody who's done that in the Army knows that that's really hard. It's even harder in California, and it's really, really hard in the California desert. And so we've been working on some facilities construction, new barracks, some community centers, teen center, those kinds of things. And that's moving along in the Army process for that. But more importantly, it's getting the programs and the people right. And that's really where our effort is. We've identified up front that the single most important issue we have here at Fort Irwin, California is spouse employment. What we realize is the American family is changing, and many of our best warfighters are a 50% or less part of a professional couple, and that relationship is important. And we've got to think about both those careers when we make a decision to hire that warfighter to come out here and be a part of our family. Making sure that we're offering programs that either allow them to transport their current career to Fort Irwin, and the COVID pandemic has opened up a huge amount of opportunity in terms of telework capability for many professional businesses and many fields across the spectrum. But also to identify those skill sets and those spouses before they leave home station, and then offer them opportunity here. And you know, we've got the tightest labor market that anybody's seen in my lifetime, certainly. With you can't go anywhere nowadays without finding people asking for people to work. The same here at Fort Irwin. We've got over 200 jobs available at Fort Irwin, and so we're marketing that to our families, and then helping them work through the process of applying to government jobs and USA jobs, and working through that process. Tied to that, so spouse employment is the big one, but kind of a corollary is childcare. And so we recognize that you're not going to be able to employ spouses unless you can solve the childcare problem. So we track that very, very carefully. We've gotten some great resourcing to help us grow our childcare capacity here, so that we can get more of our spouses who desire that kind of care to seek employment or to be able to do other things. And then the last one I just want to highlight, because when people think quality of life, they think about money, and they think about, again, about bricks and mortar, but it's about social connection.
Yeah.
And if we think about suicide prevention, and we think about creating a more diverse and inclusive environment, all those come back to how well do I know my neighbor? And how well do I know my squad mates? And we can do that right here. I don't need a dime from the U.S. government to help us get better at social connection. And so we've been pushing that really hard. We've got our coming out of COVID, we've had to reinvigorate our SFRG program. That's a great program. And what that is, for those of you might not be familiar with the acronym, that is about creating a family at the company level and building relationships between your most vulnerable families, which are sometimes your newest soldiers and their families, and the chain of command. So there's trust there. There's a baseline of trust. The next one we're working on is our BOSS program, Better Opportunities for Single Soldiers, to make sure that we're bringing our single soldiers in and that they're not just spending a four-day weekend in the barracks, with a little bit of alcohol and an Xbox. But they're going out and seeing this incredible community here in Southern California, and they're building social connection with their battle buddies. That really is the most important effort we can push. The thing I loved about Fort Irwin, I'm on my third tour here, is you know your neighbors.
Yeah.
You build a tight bond. It's like being in Zama, Japan, or Vicenza, Italy, or deployed in a small COP in Afghanistan. You get to learn the people around you. You build tight bonds. There's a saying here at Fort Irwin, you cry when you get here and you cry when you leave. Because people build close relationships with their fellow warriors and their families. And I see part of our job here as the leadership of the NTC is to create the environment for that to happen.
If they trust you, they'll follow you anywhere. I had a platoon when I was a platoon sergeant. I came out, little story here. I came out and I was mad at my platoon, and I started really getting on them real hard. And I was using a lot of bad words, I guess it was. Wasn't that bad, probably for the times. But after I finished, I walked away, and a platoon sergeant come up. He says, I can't believe that you talk to those soldiers like that. I talk to those soldiers the way they need to be talked to, but they know that I'll take care of them. They know that I'm the real deal. They understand if you care about their families and the people around them by your actions. And that's exactly what you're doing. So, like I said, I didn't want anything out of people in the military other than do your job and let me help you do your job as much as I can. And like I said, I love being a soldier each and every day. And God bless you for what you guys are doing and helping our service members get ready for war. Sergeant Major, do you want to add anything to that? Not what I said, what the general said.
the commander, really, he hit it all. I mean, we've had a great deal of support from the Chief of Staff of the Army, the SMA, the Army staff, a lot of support. Barracks is a big focus that we've got going forward. The only thing I might add to what he said is with regard to our schools as well. We have a fantastic relationship with Silver Valley, the entire school district. We have three schools on the installation that go up to eighth grade. But what I really want to talk about is the high school. And some of this was born of COVID. Everybody started going to school virtual. But what it did was it forced us in the school district to kind of open our aperture a little bit and see what was possible. So we've got some great programs, whether you go in person or hybrid or completely virtual, that have definitely made an improvement on our families and our kids' lives. The ability to take AP courses, college classes, things that previously weren't offered. And I think that's been a huge quality of life lift for our soldiers and our families. That's the only thing I would add to what the commander said.
Yeah, real quick, I got a couple more things to ask you. But if there's one thing you'd change at Fort Irwin, what would it be, sir? You first, and then Sergeant Major. One thing that you'd like to improve or whatever. Just one thing you'd like to change.
Oh, I think as a policy, we need to make it easier for, again, it goes back to what I said, we need to make it easier for our spouses to apply for a job, to be hired for that job, and to know that they can start work as soon as their husband or their spouse reports to work here at Fort Irwin. I'll be honest with you, the Army's working on that. We just had the head of CHARA, the Army's Human Relations Agency, out here at Fort Irwin, little tiny Fort Irwin, and she didn't just come for a couple hours. She stayed here for 4 days and really dug into exactly that problem and how can we create better opportunities for our spouses.
Wow. Sergeant Major?
And again, it's a problem that's being worked, but I would have my kids in new barracks across the installation, like today. I would get them in new barracks. That would be the thing that I would change, is just to be able to do that faster. But the Army's been great. We're working the processes that we have to work to get them. But that would probably be if I could change something like overnight, wave my magic wand. That would be it.
Yeah. Hey, unfortunately, we're sort of going to the end of the show here. So are there any final thoughts that you want to share with the audience? Anything that, maybe you missed? I told you before we ever started, this is your show. I want to make sure that the people that are listening out there understand what the capabilities are of the National Training Center and what they're doing for our country and for our military. Sir, we'll start with you. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, SMA, I want to say, I want to share a story with you. I know you got a lot of retired non-commissioned officers on the net who might be worried about, where our Army is. So Thanksgiving Day, we go to the Wednesday before, like every unit in the Army, we went to the mess hall, and Sergeant Major and I are standing there talking to soldiers as they're coming through the line. And I probably asked 70 soldiers what their plans were on Thanksgiving Day. 4-day weekends are pretty sacred here at Fort Irwin. We don't get a lot of them. People tend to travel. I want to make sure our soldiers are traveling safe. And to a man, I either heard from young soldiers, just at random, who happened to be in the line, I either heard, I'm going to see my family or I'm going to my sergeant's house.
Yeah.
And that is amazing. Without prompting from the leadership, but just because of the culture that we've created, our non-commissioned officers knew that they were not going to let their soldiers sit in the barracks on Thanksgiving Day. To a man and woman, every soldier I asked either had a plan to go see family and travel, maybe with a buddy, or if they were going to be on Fort Irwin, they're going to be having Thanksgiving with one of their non-commissioned officer leaders. And that just says so much about where our Army is today. We talk a lot about engaged leadership, and of course, we see it when it fails. We know what happens when we fail in engaged leadership. The soldier that had a bunch of high risk factors that we missed, and the chain of command wasn't tracking. But as we focus on those, the 99%, they're out there. And your non-commissioned officers, SMA, are doing the right thing. They're taking care of their young men and women, and they're making the very best out of this next generation of great volunteers we've got coming into our Army.
Yeah, we have a tendency to focus on the negative versus the positive. There's a lot of wonderful things that go on each and every day, but they'll talk about that one thing. Life's not perfect, but I agree with you. There's a lot of good things, and you're doing a wonderful job. We got a great officer and non-commissioned officer going in the United States Army. Sergeant Major, any final thoughts for you?
To kind of slide in a little bit on what the commander said, people talk a lot about the Army's change. It's certainly changed from the time I've joined. I'm sure it's changed from the time that you joined. There's a lot of change. There's a lot of things that are happening. But there's a lot of great change that's happening. There's a lot of things that are we're doing that are the right way, the things that we should be doing. And I, like the boss said, I'm proud. I'm proud to be a non-commissioned officer. I'm proud of my sergeants. And I'll tell you, the one thing that has not changed is that we are an army of American soldiers that are ready to go to war and are ready to be led by their non-commissioned officers and their officers. It's a tremendous team. Every day, every rotation, every time I get to go out there, I'm amazed at what I see, at the things that these fantastic Americans are accomplishing.
Well, people always, I talk to a lot of people all the time. They always say the fact that, the Army's changed. And I said, hey, the Army has to change. When I came in the Army, we had M14s. when I left the Army, we had ARs. The Army has to change. It's about technology. It's about equipment. It's about training. It's about making it better. Because guess what? If you don't change pretty quick, you won't be the best Army in the world. So you have to continue to change and develop our non-commissioned officer and officer corps and our equipment and technology. That's just a part of life. So keep changing. People, I have people talk to me all the time about I don't like this or I don't like that. And I always say one thing. I said, look, when I was in the Army, I did all I could. Now I'm out of the Army. All I do is support the Army. And the decision that they make, I don't have to like them because I'm not there, but I support them. Because I know they're doing what's right for them. I got to tell you one more story. When I got to be Sergeant Major of the Army, a friend of mine, John Stevens, called me up and says, "Hey, I'm going to give you some advice." I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "The things that you did to become the Sergeant Major of the Army, don't change them because now you're the Sergeant Major of the Army." Because sometimes people's heads swell up and they think, "Hey, look at me." And so don't change who you are. Just like you guys, don't change who you are. You're great leaders. And don't change the development as you move on within your military career. He said, I said, "What's the second thing?" He said, 50% of the people like you and 50% of the people won't like you. So when you make a decision, you make a decision based on what's good for the Army, not for Jack Tilley, you know, not for General Taylor, Sergeant Major Justin. It's for good of the unit is what you make the decision for. And as long as you're doing that, I think in life you're always going to be great. So, you know, thanks to the Brigadier General Taylor and Sergeant Major Justin. Thank you guys for being on the show. I'd love this discussion. I wish we could talk for 2 or 3 hours, but keep training, keep teaching, and keep coaching our officer and non-commissioned officer corps. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. You're enjoying your next mission. And thank you for being with us today. Please visit our website at yournextmission.org and leave me a review. I always say leave me a good review. If it's going to be a bad one, well, okay, bring it on. Let me listen to it. But, you know, give me a review. You can also visit our partners there, and that'll provide you with so many services that will assist you in your transition from the military. We want to help you any way that we can. Also, please visit our corporate partners and see all the jobs that are available. I think in this country now they have 11 million jobs, and guess what? We have some on our website for people that need employment. Please know we want to assist you any way that we can. Please follow me on my personal social media channels. I never thought I'd ever say that. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn. And if you enjoyed our discussion with Brigadier General Taylor and Sergeant Major Justin, please like us and click on the subscribe button below. Don't forget, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message or send me a text at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilley@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Brigadier General Taylor and Sergeant Major Justice for being with us today. It was a really just great having you on the show. And I want to leave you with three things to remember. We're dedicating season 2 of Your Next Mission to all those veterans and family members who struggle with mental illness, which so often has led to someone taking their life. Please reach out to and someone you haven't spoken to in a long time and just to check up on them and see how they're doing. You know, I'm going to tell you a little story. I had a good friend of mine here probably, I guess, about 3 or 4 weeks ago that I won't mention his name, but he was a senior guy in the military. He let his dog out in the backyard. His wife had left. And he walked down the block and gave a note to a guy standing on the corner. And he went out in the woods and committed suicide. It's about helping each and every one of us each and every day. It's about checking on your buddy and making sure that's okay. You know, just because you take that uniform off doesn't mean that you're not still serving. Second, I'd like every veteran in this country, you know, I'm proud of being a soldier. I'm proud of the things that I was able to do. And sometimes I think people forget about that. So I'm gonna ask you each Friday and on your service birthday, I want you to wear your military hat. I want you to put that hat on that says, U.S. Army or U.S. Navy or Marine Corps or Coast Guard or Air Force, but be proud of who you are. You guys and gals lead by example in this country. let's help some people out. Let's do the right things. Let's be proud of, again, what you've done and what you continue to do. And I want to encourage everyone who is watching or listening today to reach out to your neighbor. You know, something amazes me every day that, you know, I walk about 4 or 5 miles a day, and I walk by people and I say good morning or afternoon or hey, how you doing and what's going on. And a lot of times they'll look at the ground. They won't engage me. You know, I was taught in the military to give them some kind of response. Good morning, good afternoon, or a smile. Well, here's what I'm asking you now. Offer a smile or a helping hand. Together, let's try to bridge that divide that's sometimes affected so many of us. Together we stand as a team. It's about life, it's about God, it's about making a difference in our country. Again, thanks for being with us, and thanks to Cloudcast Media, and of course our 4 presenting sponsors, Calvary Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans. We appreciate all you do for our military. See you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.
Cloudcast Media.